Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of September 2019. I'm your host, Robert, and this episode sadly does not feature a surprise guest appearance by Ozzy Osbourne. And with me, I have...
I'll say it again. Fuck your bullshit, America, you bunch of fucking cowards.
And...
I don't know why there's a guy with a gun for a head.
And apparently he's voiced by the best Sephiroth impersonator in Part 5 of JoJo. So I'm told... I gotta learn more about them seiyus that all the kids are into these days.
Yeah, from what I hear, Alf wants to need to get some work after his brother got caught being a sex pest.
Ooh.
Ooh, well, that's how the cookie crumbles.
Or how the transmutation circle breaks apart. Is that how transmutation works? I don't know. It's been forever since I watched Full Metal Alchemist.
It's going to be a long time for us to.
Yeah. I mean, there's always subtitled, so.
Yep.
Yeah.
And once again, fuck you, dickless lasagna man.
L after L. But anyway.
Little bitch.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about that. That's the other podcast. We're here to talk about albums. And September had them. I mean, every month has albums, I think. Have you ever heard of a month with no albums? That'd be fucking weird, right? Anyway, so, you know, before we get into that discussion business, we of course have to catch everyone up to speed on some of the more notable releases that actually came out this past September. So starting off with the rock, indie, folk, and singer-songwriter shit, we have the newest album from the New Pornographers with In the Morse Code of Break Lights, Canadian lesbian senpais Tegan and Sarah with Hey, I'm Just Like You, singer-songwriter Jenny Aval with The Practice of Love, Devandra Banhart with his new album Ma. For some reason, both of the Gallaghers deciding we needed to hear their shit, Liam with Why Me, Why Not, I can think of several reasons Why Me, Why Not, and Noel Gallagher's High Flying Turds, with an EP called This Is The Place. A new project from Fits in the Tantrums with All the Feels, Iggy Pop with his new album Free. There was a new EP from Alice Cooper called Breadcrumbs. There was a new, Pixies album. I don't know why my brain blanked there for a second. Beneath the Eerie. Singer-songwriter Chelsea Wolfe with Birth of Violence. Blink-182 with Nine. And, of course, Sturgill Simpson with his new album and Netflix movie Sound and Fury. Going on to the metal and hardcore stuff, there was a new one from experimental act Coyote with Blasphemy. Puddle of Mud, for some reason, with Welcome to Galvania. A new Korn album titled The Nothing. The big 10-year comeback of the number 12 Looks Like You with Wild Gods. The newest album from Cult of Luna with A Dawn to Fear. There was a new project from black metalers Migwa with Age of Excuse. Blunt Oss Nord with Hallucinogen. Infant Annihilators slamming their way in with The Battle of Yeldabaoth. The first new album in 27 years from metal act X-Hoarder with Mourn the Southern Skies. There was a new Dragon Force project, Extreme Power Metal. The newest one from Hell Yeah with Welcome Home. There was a new Of Mice and Men project, Earth and Sky. Sleeping with Sirens with How It Feels to Be Lost. There was a new Beartooth EP called The Blackbird Sessions. The new debut album from See You Space Cowboy with the correlation between entrance and exit wounds. There was a new Car Bomb album, Mordial, a new KMFDM album, Paradise, Ghost with an EP, 7 Inches of Satanic Panic, Steel Panther with Heavy Metal Rules, and of course the new Opeth project, Incauda Venium. Moving on to the hip-hop and R&B stuff for a second, there was a new Young Ma project, Her Story in the Making, Kevin Gates with his new album, I'm Him, IDK finally ending the teasing with his new album, Is He Real, DaBaby deciding to drop his new album, Kirk. There was a new Ghostface Killah project, Ghostface Killahs. And, of course, the newest one from Peggy, JPEG Mafia, with All My Heroes Are Cornballs. Moving on to, lastly, the pop and electronic stuff. There was a new M83 project called DS7. A new Tove Lo album, Sunshine Kitty. The new Zach Brown Band album, The Owl. A new Alessia Cara EP, This Summer. The newest album from Lindsay Sterling with Artemis. Post Malone with Hollywood's Bleeding, and last but not least, Charlie XCX with Just Plain Charlie. So there's a lot here, and I may have listened to possibly twice as many albums as the other people here. So we should probably get started right away. So, Alex, care to kick things off with us, sir?
Yeah, and boy, do I wish I had more time to spare in my very, very, very busy work week, both in the actual job and all the other stuff. Never enough time in the day, but I managed to pick a couple of things, plus one that we'll get to in the end. But I'm going to start with this new album from Lindsey Stirling, Artemis. And part of me is kind of ashamed to admit this is my introduction to her after, you know, being told how great she is for like the last 5 years.
Let me just say, I'm right there with you, literally.
Oh, yeah. But now I know. And so we have a kind of concept album based around Greek mythology and of Artemis, the daughter of Zeus, with a very anime as balls album cover to it.
Yes, yes it is.
It's very striking, I'll give you that much. Now, the opening track on here, Underground, it sets the mood using a blend of violin melodies and synthetic electro-pop backing, giving everything a bit of dark mood lighting to it, which continues with the title track, Artemis, and Till the Light Goes Out. There's even a bit of that early 10s dubstep work that I'm hearing. Haven't heard that in forever. Remember when dubstep was cool, kids? Dark times.
Yes.
All right, so yeah. Everything is working to create a very vivid atmosphere, and that's the best way I can describe this album. Atmospheric, combining the electronic synthetic backbeats with the violins, and of course, Lindsey's excellent voice. It's quite heavenly. But this album was sold on just one track alone, though. Love Goes On and On, featuring Amy Lee of Evanescence. And yes, I can confirm, this song absolutely makes my heart flutter and swoon. It's so good! The second half of the album makes things a little more upbeat, with tracks like Masquerade and The Upside carrying a feel of affirmation to them, before reaching an amazing climax with Guardian and Aurora. And this has the same feel to me as the Moron Police album. This is one of the most pleasant listening experiences I've had all year. It's a great chill out and relax kind of album. Ones I can just sit back to, close my eyes, and just soak it all in, man. It's good. I give it a big old Seymour Skinner thumbs up.
I'm impersonating it myself right now.
Yeah, it's very pleasant. And now for something a little less pleasant, if only by design. The new album from Korn, The Nothing.
Aw, man.
Now, let me preface this by saying I got into Korn at a kind of weird time in their career. It was around the time of See You on the Other Side, when they were kind of in a slump. Hell, the first album I got from them, Take a Look in the Mirror.
Huh.
It's widely regarded as their worst album. But I still defend it because it's raw and it's kind of quirky in parts. Weird feature from Nas, though, but whatever.
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, yeah, that album had a feature from Nas.
The rapper Nas?
I don't know why. It was 2003. It was a weird time, okay?
Okay, okay.
2003 was weird. It gave us Saint Anger, so, yeah.
And you defend that album.
It's also raw, but neither here nor there. Yeah. Anyway, skip ahead to present day. They're in a much more stable place, I guess, lack of a better term. As for this album, it's clear that there's a big theme of isolation and loss to it, attributed mostly to Jonathan Davis's recent losses of his wife and his mother, with the tracks Surrender to Failure and This Loss packing some major gut punches to them. I know the thing is to make fun of nu metal for being out of the edge, but when it's as raw as this, when you hear about what he was doing to get his vocal delivery as powerful as it can be, isolating himself to really dig deep. It's warranted to take things to that much of an extreme. Production-wise, the band sounds super tight with both Monkey and Head's low-tuned chug riffs driving the songs, those slap-heavy, fieldy bass lines coming in for their wonderful accentuations, and Ray Luzier's excellent drum work, although I think his snare drum was a little too compressed for its own good. All with Jonathan's wailing and piercing vocals setting a very somber, claustrophobic, anxious atmosphere to it. Some of the more standout cuts on here are Finally Free and The Closer, Idiosyncrasy, that wrap up the anxious anger aspect, with the latter serving as the cacophonous breaking point and the capstone of a pretty visceral album on all fronts. Not a bad outing from Korn, one of the best I've heard from them in a long time. And when you make the path of totality, you have nowhere to go but up.
Okay, fair. I can't argue that point.
Yeah. And so 2019's given us a pretty good batch of albums in the rock and metal scene. I mean, we've gotten great albums from Children of Bodom, Devin Townsend, Dream Theater, Periphery, and honestly, too many that I can't even reference right now. Hell, we still have Lacuna Coil and Baby Metal to look forward to this year. And of course, I can't forget Tool, Slipknot. Did I mention Tool? We finally got that album.
I believe you did, yes.
Oh, and Whitechapel. Can't forget them either. That was a great album.
I gotta go back and re-listen to that.
Yeah.
Gotta been wanting to now.
It was good. So I mentioned all this, and I wonder, why do we have a Puddle of Mud album in 2019?
I feel like this is a monkey's paw sort of thing. Like, someone somewhere made a wish, and this was the unintended backfire consequence.
Well, someone had to break the streak of good rock albums for 2019, and it had to be Wes Scantlin and his band of a backing band. And believe it or not, this is their first new original album in 10 years. Now, was it worth the wait? Can't quite call it a bad album. It's just there, stranded in the ethos of perfectly average to below average post-grunge from like 2002 that somehow has escaped in 2019. There's just nothing memorable about it. It's an album that exists. That's all I can say about it. Why did you have to break the streak, Wes Scantlin? I know you're clean and sober, but like, come on, we're doing so well this year. What gives?
I don't know. Maybe, yeah, your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think I need something a little bit more powerful to amp the mood up. So, do you like grand and adventurous power metal with lots of blistering solos?
Sometimes.
Then Dragon Force's Extreme Power Metal is the album for you. But don't let the first track fool you, because it's actually slow. Interesting change of pace. But the rest of the album is more of what you'd expect from Dragon Force. More of the same, but it's not really a bad thing. This album has a definite strong, cheesy 80s action movie approach to it, given its album art, the themes of the songs, and, the cover of Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On, complete with 8-bit instruments at the start before, they do their Dragon Force thing with shred wankery and blast beats, you know, that thing.
Yeah.
All right. Now, as per usual, I like to pull something out from nowhere. And if Moron Police's A Boat on the Sea was the best album that nobody listened to, Given is the best anime of the summer that nobody watched. And believe it or not, there is a tie-in EP for the series with the two songs that I believe were written for the show. I got nothing to really constructively contribute about this. The first track is a somber ballad. The second is a more powerful rock banger. It's just, go listen to it and watch the show. So good. So good.
Okay, then.
Yeah. Very good stuff. Okay. Now I'm at a bit of a crossroads. So this new Opeth album. This one is a challenge for me. I wish I had more to say about it besides the riffs are heavy and the bass lines are thick. I know that they're kind of stuck with their whole 70s prog rock styling, and that's the direction they want to go for. But this leaves me with very little to talk about. I'm left with a really big challenge here. I'm going to have to put a pin in this and come back to it later. I need more time on this one. This is beyond my capabilities. Need a little more time to work on this. You're blowing my mind, Michael, and not in a good way. Damn it. Ugh. Yeah. Frustrated. Okay, so, Sergio Simpson, Sound and Fury. Now, Mark did the heavy lifting on this one. Read his review.
Yes.
But yay. I have a few bits to say about this project. This is a groovy, sludgy, and even funky album, blending some of that southern fried rock and roll with some 80s synthwave, electronica, and even a little bit of disco in parts. Again, this is coming from a country musician. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It even takes a good 7 songs for anything country to come up in the playback, and it all gets compiled into some excellent jam rock all throughout, with especially on that final track, Fastest Horse in Town, as it amps up faster and faster and louder and louder. Very good. I'll have more to say about the anime feature elsewhere, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
The other podcast, Podcast ONA.
Synergy up in here. Yeah. So that was 7 albums, but I did say I have a plus one as well, and while this isn't technically an album release, it did happen in September, so I'm using a loophole here to talk about it, but Metallica S&M 2, it happened, I saw it in the theater. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. This was some good shit, man! Now, I come into this with an almost encyclopedic knowledge of the original concert from 20 years ago. I've studied this thing forwards and back for the better part of 13 years or so, because I was given a VHS tape of it from my orchestra teacher in 6th grade, and I never looked back. I watched the tape over and over and over again. And of course, I got the DVD and the CD and the vinyl because, of course, I have the vinyl. I've studied this thing forward and back. I've listened to all the stems. I know this inside and out. So I was very eager to see how they would approach it 20 years later with a different conductor, since Michael Kamen is no longer with us. And they nailed it right out of the park. Absolutely out of the park. It was so good. And they even switched things up a little bit. Now, it started off with, of course, a 2 bits from the original concert, Call of Cthulhu and For Whom the Bell Tolls, with those original Michael Kamen arrangements. Sounds fantastic. Loud. Amped up. Why did the crowd suck? Nobody in my theater was really singing along to it besides me and, like, 2 other people. Y'all suck.
Bastards.
Yeah. Yep. Them bastards. But there were some new arrangements done for some of the newer songs that were included, like Data Never Comes, Confusion, Moth Into Flame. I won't say they're bad arrangements, but they're not quite on the same level as what Michael Kamen did. It felt more like going along with the guitar parts instead of building and adding to the guitar parts, like as you can hear in Call of Cthulhu, which is awesome. Same with The Outlaw Torn. I don't care what anyone says about those load-reload albums. That's one of my favorite Metallica songs. No freaking question. Then things got a little interesting in the second half, featuring a few interesting pieces. notably the Scythian Seat Opus 22nd Movement by the Symphony themselves, a piece called Iron Foundry, which had Metallica accompanying the symphony on it. It's loud, boisterous, orchestral metal. It's awesome. Then there was The Unforgiven 3 off Death Magnetic with the San Francisco Symphony and James singing solo. No guitar, nope, no Lars, no Kirk, no Rob. That's an emotional experience right there, my God. And just to make things even weirder, they pulled out their acoustic rearrangement of All Within My Hands from St. Anger. It's weird, but it actually works. It works really, really well with the orchestra as well. And just for the hell of it, because we want to explore the possibilities, let's have a bass soloist from the symphony do a blistering, picture-perfect rendition of Anesthesia Pulling Teeth on an electric stand-up bass with fuzz and distortion and wah. That is one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. My God, I want to watch it again. DVD, please. And of course, you close out with a five pack of staples, Wherever I May Roam. One, Master of Puppets, which didn't have the Michael Kamen arrangement, had new arrangements. That was kind of weird. Then Nothing Else Matters, and then, of course, Enter Sandman. Hear the applause. An amazing concert experience. Wish I had the money to go to San Francisco to actually be there in person, but hey, seeing it in the theater, that'll do for me. Now, when's that Blu-ray coming out, guys? I need it. I need to study this inside and out like I have the other one. Come on, release day, please. And, you know, maybe you'll do that before the other thing that we'll talk about next time.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
Yeah, that thing. We gotta do some planning, don't we?
Yes. Yes, I suppose so. But yes, that covers all of Alex's various musical happenings. Now we move on to the middle chunk with our dude Mark. So, of course, go on ahead, sir.
All right. So I'm looping a little things differently this time around. Like, usually I start with high to low, but I'm going to just do a little mix it around just to, just to be unpredictable and shit.
Ooh, spicy.
So, yeah. So I'm going to start out with, The Baby, yeah. I thought with his second studio album, Kirk, which from the album cover, which his name was a baby next to his dad, which I'm guessing the case of his dad because like it read that his father died at the release of his first album, Baby on Baby, which was this year, which I heard around the time of Nipsey Hussle's death, which that's kind of fucked up thinking about that. Well, sad, but yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we get like, now, we know like, you have the track called Intro, which is, well, the intro of this album, which we talked about on this Mo Boost like a couple of weeks ago. And you get a little personal about, you know, him coming up to the game, like, you know, especially how, you know, all that shit, family, all that shit. Like, you're thinking, would the album be more like this? Not really. I mean, the album is like, I mean, I know people think that maybe it might be kind of at least such a big repetitive, like, it kind of is. I mean, the dude still has like a nice flow. He's energetic. He definitely sounds good when he's rapping. He does sound good when he's rapping. Like Southern Magic is, well, I mean, it's not really all that different. Like, you get some little personal shit here and there, but you do get the basic rap shit, like getting girl, get girls point, all the type of shit. I will say, like, but it does try to do some things different, although they ain't that good. Like, I think he tried to sing in some songs which they didn't fit. Like, I know, like this one song, Gospel, which it didn't fit so. I think one of my least favorite songs in there. It sounds like something you hear a Chance the Rapper on. Which, speaking of which, the features on there are him, Gucci Mane, and YK Osiris. Huh. And he's singing, and he's singing ass, which sounds like his full name is Osiris, which, damn, that'd be a cool name to have, but, yeah, he's just regular singing ass nigga. Gucci Mane's there, just, being Gucci Mane, and Chance the Rapper is, well, I don't know, his verse is, well, it ain't that better, but it's like, I mean, it's slightly a bit, well, not as bad as everything he did on the big day, which he didn't get, like, wow, well, he came to your album to say that one track, which was still garbage, but now it's like, you come to his track, like, you didn't do nothing to it. I mean, okay, like, there's that, like, iPhone with Nicki Minaj, the not-so-retired Nicki Minaj, why y'all rappers keep saying y'all retired, but you're not?
I know, right? It's like they're trying to do the Miyazaki thing. Except we like Miyazaki.
Yeah. That one's not good either. That one's kind of meh either. Like, okay, like, there is some stuff that I do like. I mean, Off the Rip was alright. I like Popstar with Kevin Gates, although I think I like Kevin Gates' part more. I mean, better more than the babies. Like, Bob was a bop. Vibes was not really all that vibey, just more, it's more like banger shit. But, yeah, that's what I expect. Yeah, that's kind of what I mean, the way I sound is like, it sounds like I'm disappointed, but I'm not really disappointed. I'm just like, eh, I knew what to expect. I knew what to find, but, I mean, it's like something that just grabs me. Like, I mean, it does have one track called Double XL, which I'm guessing is probably his freestyle, which is what I'm guessing, like, from that. But this album is, well, I mean, I'm not gonna say it's awful, just like, I knew what to expect, and there you go. There it is. It's like, it's like, I got a McDonald's cheeseburger, and guess what? I got a McDonald's cheeseburger. Yeah, okay, now. Okay, to get to the other album that I'm talking about, which, well, I did a rewrite. Let's go to our old friend, Peggy. Mr. JPEG Mafia with All My Heroes Are Cornballs.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. So I admit, I would say in my first time, but I did Soldiers of the Veteran, like, way back. I just don't remember all of it that much. I know he goes with the whole, I'm gonna disappoint all y'all, which I kind of get, like, people expected the V-Veron too, but it's not. Like, the V-Veron, I mean, this album is, I mean, I do like a good chunk of this album, like, especially around, like, some things of the album, like, of course, with the first single, Jesus Gave Me a Thought, which got all this, like, most terrifying noise and that fucking good guitar and the piano riff, which, that's a free. I can't sing like he does. He doesn't have singing in this album. Like, he definitely saying, I'm gonna do more singing, more melodic rapping, like that type of shit, which was all right, the shit that sounds good on him. And one of my favorite tracks in here is called Beta Male Strategies, which I was bumping into, like, maybe because I like the fact that the whole thing postponing, like, internet trolls, where it says, take a seat on Twitter, get out of the house, with a keyboard, like, maybe because I like that call internet trolls, that was like, okay, I'm definitely loving this, right, and you do get this instrumental, but after JPEG Mafia type beat, which I know, like, I know it's response to him, like, people saying, like, his beats are compare his beats to Death Grips and Blackie, which kind of hurt a lot.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah, like, there's also the song of, like, Grimy Waifu, which is old to his gun. Like, his gun is his waifu, which, come to think of it, I wonder if the guy from No Guns Life would be his waifu.
Crossover.
I know something would come to this. Okay, yeah, like, there's even, speaking of, like, troll shit, there's also another track out there, like, what's that called, Dot Tactics, which I'm guessing is more about that shit, or about this shit, like, okay, also, I read about, like, I think the worst song people got on is Life's Hard. Here's a song about Sorrel, which is actually his biscuits tea, which I'm guessing is, you know, since, you know, he used to make him, which I'm guessing is, you know, his homage to that shit, which, okay, I get that. Like, and like I said, the dude does sing a lot. The dude does, you know, he does do more singing in here, because, like, on a Basic Bitch Tear Gas, which he covers No Scrubs by TLC, and the dude's a good singer. I can give him that. I can say that he got some good notes. Okay, I will say, like, on this last track, Poppy, I miss you. There is this one line that I didn't get at first, or I didn't listen to at first, but I did sort of got to it right. I'm like, when it says, niggas, bulls, bitches say the ghost records cracker pay me. Around here, niggas fake this shit gravy. Big M since the mid-80s. This is a little baby sad, yet left-wing Hades, huh? And hold up. And it's like that I gotta say. Trying to lead these niggas to freedom. Peggy Harriet. Damn, Peggy. Talk about us on the airing at Redneck Tears. Ooh, what a beverage. And I'll say this with this album, like, I'm not disappointed. I wasn't expecting the same shit. It's like, I really fuck with this album. Like, a lot. Peggy don't do some good. Like, I really got in the end, like, you know, this year. Like, I know, cause since the first song it hooked me, like, yeah, This is some good shit. Big ups to Peg and big ups to JPEG Mafia, especially since you got another project that we'll talk next month. But yeah, and now the other EP that they mentioned, Can't Wait the Machine with Look What I've Become. That's right. Another look at one of Griselda's boys.
They're never leaving.
Oh, that's right. They're leaving. Considering they got more coming, especially this and next month. Man, I'll say this. This is some good ass grimy shit. You got some grimy songs, grimy content, grimy production, like everything. It's some new grimy shit. I will say on one song, half of it. I do hear coming on a trap beat, which on this song, which there's a sample, like there's also a sample of that one scene of Boys in the Hood. You know that one scene where Cuba Gooding shouts out Ricky, and you know what happens. Most of you see Boys in the Hood, like, well, it's been more like, yeah, but yeah, like it's weird. Maybe it's weird here. Maybe it's kind of weird hearing him on a trap beat on that. But I mean, it's not really John, but it's just like it's kind of okay. Brother Chuck is pretty good. Like, I do like songs like The Woman No Kids, Black Spoons with DJ Muggs, Tito's Back, of course, with, of course, the Reference Crew. And, the last song you made it with Amber Simone, which has this very soulful beat from Stag Selector, which, okay, this is a really soulful shit, like, he's singing about. What the fuck am I saying? What the fuck was that? Another case of why Griselda is nothing to fuck with. They is nowhere to sleep with. Don't sleep with these motherfuckers. There'll be more of them coming soon. And believe me, there'll be more of them coming soon. And now, another section of what I call motherfuckers we know from Brain Feeder, or at least stuff leasing, but not on the label, but more on their own shit. One that we ain't talked about yet. What we have talked about yet. But let's go with the one that we haven't talked about yet. There's a producer named Monopoly, or as it's spelled, Mono, then the slash, then Poly. Yeah, it's weird like that. Anyway, he has an album called Monotonic. I stumbled upon this, what's this album called? Like, okay, which heard you got appearances, like, you got, like, appearances and features or production from, you know, features from Kimbra, Thundercat, who I think since the Buddy Buddies, since Buddy Buddies was, you know, brain for me at all, and Kitchenada, but like helping in there, which I think, okay, I gotta check this shit out. And I'll definitely say this. This is definitely somebody from the brain, I mean, from the Brain Feeder family, because it's like, this is like some very wavy experimental electronic music, which I could definitely dig into. I'm really fucking with this. Like, you got songs like When I Come For You, the beginning of the song, which I really love. Even Living with Kimbra, which is also there. Oh, also numbers who shouldn't sleep on Kimbra. There's one too. Mm. They even got some dope tracks like Audio Dope, which yes, yeah, get it. I got Audio Dope and Sage, which okay, they got Sage, which got a good verse from this server named Mean Bacharach. Okay, I never heard of you, but this should sound, but you sound good. But yeah, like this. I know I heard a bit of Monopoly, like when I look at that Brain Feeder anniversary thing last year. But yeah, I can see why this, when I listened to this first time, I'm like, all right, this is some cool shit. I'm liking this. Like, LeBron to this guy. I kind of want to hear more. I kind of want to look back at this shit. And then go to another brain feeder affiliate or people who been in there. Let's talk about an old friend, Igloo Ghost.
Oh.
You see, he has collaboration with let's see, Kai Wiston and Babby. I don't know what they call. Yes, they got an album which called XYZ. And I can say this. It's funky as hell. It's definitely what you expect from an Igloo Ghost thing. It got this wonky production that the weird sound that I love and the weird sound that I'm fucking with, and Babby's, and I think Babby's on vocals, which okay, the vocals sound good. I'm liking what they do. Those songs that I can fuck with Lux 2, Drown You, Teeth Chisel, and Lamb, like it's not tracks. I want to say it's more of an EP than an album. I don't know. I think, well, it ain't, well, it's under 30, well, it's, that's 30 minutes, so it's kind of like an EP, so I guess it's that. So yeah, I'll say this. This collaboration that they did, pretty damn good. And now for three big ones, which I'll talk about because they evolved some more big. But first, let's get to a soundtrack to a show or Cartoon Network that we all know and love that got a movie that month.
Oh yeah,
that's right, Steven Universe the movie soundtrack.
Steven Universe the movie, which people actually watched because Cartoon Network suddenly remembered how to promote a friggin' show for once.
Yeah, thank God. And let me say this for the soundtrack, since a musical, which, okay, no shit, it's a musical. You go create this show in the first place. The musical is like, it's like the best Disney musical that Disney ain't touched. Cause like, as we begins with the Tell of Steven, which sung by, you know, the diamonds, which all voice sung by Christine Ebersole, Lisa Hannigan, Pale Lapone. This sounds like it's just like going over of a very classic Disney movie. This sounds like it sounds like I'm fucking like probably watching Cinderella on VHS. It sounds so magical. It gives this fucking warm feeling, like. Especially with them also going with that's a Doja Howler that I was talking about. Steven, can you stay up, Steven? And I'm like, you know what? I gotta go back at home at Earth where I need it with my family and friends, all that shit. So yeah, I gotta go. And of course you get the whole, you know him talking about Happy Ever After, both Steven and Pearl, Amethyst, and Garnet, which, you know, all voiced by, Zach Callison, that's Steven, Dee Mandel Hall, that's Pearl, Michaela Dietz, that's Amethyst, and of course Estelle, that's Pearl. Garnett. You know, hey! There's a lot of things I gotta remember, alright? Right, there's a lot of motherfucking names, but yeah, I like how to go, like, once upon a time when this shit happened to me back then, like how, you know, Steven progresses his powers, how Pearl going through all, you know, being a little pink diamond, all that shit, and, you know, all this shit going on with them. And of course you get to, I think one of the major highlights of the musical and with this album, Sarah Styles, who plays, Spinel. Which, of course, you got the one song everybody will sing about, Other Friends, which sounds like a motherfucking shit. What's that fucking game?
Cuphead?
Cuphead. It's like a song with the animation, which, of course, has this very 1930s cartoon style, that shit. I gotta get with this shit. All those got some very awesome ones. Like, of course, you got songs like "Who We Are," which was so amazing by Uzo Aduba, aka
Bismuth.
Shit. Yes, Bismuth. I'm trying to remember names. All right, damn it. Like, I know names just blanking out, but yes. I really like that singing from her. I think she did great on that. And of course the songs with Estelle singing, which is a love, which is good. And of course the one song that everybody knows that been around True Kind of Love, which is of course a very good song. That's a very damn good song. And I'm gonna add this: it's the only song that Chester the Rapper had anything to do with, which, wow, it didn't suck. Because it can't be said, the last couple of months, he's involved in the soundtrack and he wanted to produce on the movie, which, at least you did one good thing. You didn't add, I don't know, make a hot shower in here, but anyway. You do get some other good songs with the forms of Independent together with Ted Leo, aka Stag, aka is Dirty Fan. I think there's fan art of that now. Is there fan art of Stag or some fucking thing? I don't know. There might be like Ted Leo and Any Man who's Opal, which both of them are, you know, they are a group called, well, both. But that's before the the one song "Disobedient," which is by Kate Micucci, aka Sadie Killer, aka hey, isn't the girl from Garfunkel and Oates? Yeah, that girl, and also Michaela Dietz as well. Like, and of course you got another highlight from Sarah Styles, which with "Drift Away," which sings about how she and Pink Diamond, you know, used to hang out, and when she left to do her thing, she stayed in the planet for hours and years, and then you realize, wow, Pink Diamond's a bitch. Damn. you just left her sitting in the planet for thousands of years, just standing there, waiting for you to come back. It's like, you just left her all alone. Like, fuck. But anyway. I'm going to close by saying that yeah, this is like, usually I don't care about musicals because I'm not really a musical guy, but since Steven Universe is, this shit is good. I can say this is definitely a great song to already fantastic movie, and with the power of Rebecca Sugar and her collaborators, which includes Gallon, James Fauntleroy, and a bunch of other motherfuckers. Which they have the degree as well. Even, especially the music composers. Ivy and Sarashu. Sarashu, yes. The composer of the series. yeah, they downed with this. Like, this is, I mean, it's awful and wonderful. This is the, like I say, it's the most Disney-ass musical sounding songs that Disney ain't touched. And yes, I can't wait for Steven Universe Future, or Shippuden, or fuck it, you know what it's gonna be. Yeah. Okay. Now that the final two, let's get things rocking a bit with Sturgill Simpson, Sound and Fury. Yeah. Now, before going into this album, I did go back to this, like, listen to his last album, his last album, Since Got the Earth, which, all right, I was digging the album. Like, I like his blend of, like country soul and rock, all that type of shit. Like, okay, I can see why this guy gets some praise. Like, this dude really knows how to just he don't stay in his lane. He just say, no, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna do this shit. And then with this album, which, you know, let's say this motherfucker, he was fucking his ass off. Like, this thing, this album sounds like, I was like, it sounds groovy. It sounds groovy. It got all this elements of, like Southern Fried Rock, disco, all this shit. Obviously, he mentioned before, like, it is quite a feat. Like, of course, with the album and the movie, which, got this whole dystopian apocalyptic theme, especially with the starting song, Remember to Breathe, which goes like, I go out at night just to see what I find, stay in the shadows for the light don't ever shine, have one quick confession with the darkness in my mind. There's all the talking, because I'm the quiet kind. So pull it off, pull it down, let me see it, turn around, just lay it back, and let it happen, and remember to breathe. He did it better, but the way he's singing was just like, okay, this, all right, this is some great shit. I would get into this album. Like all the songs, like, I have no problem with, like, even songs that I found okay, they were still good. They were good. Like, the single sing along, I still love that song. And it just slowed down with, Make Art Not Friends, which got this good, like, instrumental riff at the beginning, but this one is most, it's most melancholy and dour, which, you get the grimness from the lyrics, which goes right and says, like, looking at the window at a wall of fire, it's plain to see that the end is near and see all the sights, tired of the lights. So you get me out of here, see, let me off here, the town's getting crowded, just being shrouded, I think it's time to change the sound. Yeah, the wheels keep turning, the fires keep high, another flames getting higher, another circle goes around, like, and of course, you get success with the bus clapping on Mars, which, hey, Netflix, could look up the lyrics on that shit. You put unclear lyrics in the subtitles. Didn't Sturgill Simpson or anybody from that record label give you the set lyrics to say, look, put this on, put this, like, okay. Anyway, after something I know is from the film. And of course, Fast Horse of Town is the most epic way to end the album as a whole. Like, this is gonna be saying, Sturgill Simpson won me over with this album. Like, he took a lot of risks and it paid off excellently. This is probably gonna be my top non hip hop albums of this year. Like, this is excellent. I really love this. This man got me believing in him as a whole. Like, and not only this man, a country singer, songwriter, and actor. Which, yeah, he's an actor. He's an actor because he been some movies, especially one coming soon. Which we're gonna say, yeah.
We'll mention that next time.
Yeah, and like I said, there's those songs I hated here. Like, every song is fucking excellent, and again, I gotta say this. It's paid off, and it's definitely one of my top albums of 2019 when the year end comes. Cause this album is fucking excellent. I salute you, Sturgill Simpson. This is some good shit. And now from the final album, the one that you know I'm going to talk about, because we have to talk about this. IDK with Is He Real?
Finally!
Yes, the debut.
It's like forever since he's been teasing this shit.
Yes. Yeah. And now with, I guess it's made the studio debut album since he's now partnered with Warner Records. Yeah, Warner Records. They pretty say, yeah, drop the bullets from that name. Like, we're, yeah, okay, which I get, but okay. And we on the same day as Beyonce's birthday, which, okay. Which all right. Now.
Very nice.
Which, now, the thing with this album is, the theme of it is, you know, Is He Real? Which, yes, he referred to God, which, if you look at the album art, you affect, which he has a, which he has, a, you know, a sheep and a goat. Which I'm guessing is like a Bible quote or something. Like, this is the part that I have to marinate my mind a lot, because I listen to, because I just, you know, get this in my head the first few times I listen to it. And I will say this, I'm glad it don't got no sentimentalist, obnoxious attitudes in the lyrics, which there is no holier than thou bullshit, which good, thank you, because I don't want to be preached all the way in that shit, which is good. It's good. He did a good thing with that. Now the first track with a cloud blue, which has a childlike view of the afterlife, which you're thinking, everybody's in heaven, and then you think about, none of it's fucking real, which, damn, that's like, shit, just slams you just like that. And I will say there is like some biblical references to that album in some tracks, like the track 24, which has a verse, which says you can't serve two masters, that you can't serve two masters that you love and hate, those being God and money, which the lyric says, hello, that's the check con, let me come over you real quick, let me check talk about it. I eat, ooh, Pac-Man, that's the way my neck talking. I never came back eating the way stress talking. You don't mean to clap when you backpack my bad. When I pass that, when I think that's cash, which, I think when they sing, they say, you can do the right thing, you can try and do the right thing, but that don't mean you're always getting paid, but you can try to get paid, but that don't mean you're always doing the right thing. Or, you know, some shit like that. And there is like, you know, like fortune of choices, which I'm guessing is the amount of religions in around the world, or I'm guessing like that, which I'm guessing, although in that song he talks about how he came from a city so savage, how city savage, living day by day, which they mentioned some dudes will stop me in front of a church. Yes, dudes will stop me in front of a church. That's kind of fucked up, being stopped in front of a house of worship. I will say in terms of features, like, you do at least thing interesting, you do get the one from Pusha T and Jid on Porno, which they do the verses, which kind of a sex song. I mean, that when they do and the song is good. Like, do get this one hook where IDK was in the Porno hook of Wanna Be by Spice Girls. Like, do you want it like that part, let that part on Porno where he does lyrics. But after the features, like, you don't really get much verse from anybody else. Like, you hear DMX, but he's more of a sermon in the E in Blue. You hear Tyler Creator, but it's more of I Do Me, You Do You, which is a conversation track, which is him talking about how God is a stereotype. We always get Mrs. Tex, and how it ended with, if a man building a knows art is as crazy as the cave, as telling cave exists, we have a boss to fuck. Which, okay. And then you get December with Burna Boy, which I'm guessing him doing a dancehall reggae song, which he also in a track called Murder She Wrote, which I'm guessing, I know that's an old song way back, which I'm guessing that's also got something to do with the soul Murder She Wrote, which, okay, I didn't get that. Like, you do get like some heavy stuff with you, okay, like European Skies, which has that whole, you know, has a relationship, like, no cable deals with, you know, people need to keep up with mobile issues going on today, but in experiencing news fatigue, which in the course they keep saying change the channel, and then of course they don't know about digital with the good boy being in sin, when I being a murderer, you still end up being pursued by police, as in cop killing me, that's not a crime, I'm selling weed, I'm doing five. Like, I will say the two tracks that kind of fucked me up the most, like, knowing about this, the last two tracks, which is Michael WTF and Julia, mainly because, like, the former, which has a James Blake instrumental, not a feature, he's instrumental, but which I think have issues with his stepfather, which goes like, my stepfather texted me and told me mama died, ain't had the balls for a call. Now he's just taking the house and the wealth, keeping it life insurance away from himself, had another to move a bitch in the house, so get my grandpa, he kicking them out. Like, and okay, I don't even have any issues. But then on the last track, Julia, which okay, you know, was very bad. He didn't mention how, like, he never mentioned how his mother died. But when he said that he talked about how his mom was doing the time, he said everybody's shutting down, she died from AIDS. Which stepfather gives it, which I'm like, you know what, fuck the nigga Michael. I'd say fuck him too. Like, shit. It's kind of fucked up. Like, damn. Like, yeah, like, this project, like, I will say, is real. I wouldn't say the things do keep going, but they do, you know, get it time to time, like, time to time. This is an album that I have to let marinate my mind a lot, that I have to think about, I have to read the lyrics, and I know how this review, it got some positive, but more lukewarm, not like on far more kind of lukewarm, but to me, I don't know, like, to me, I keep thinking to myself, is it better than I Was Very Bad? I don't know. I mean, I like I Was Very Bad more, but I do think, like, Is It Real is something that does make me, you know, think about some shit, like more of, you know, the whole God thing, at least more in a more spiritual way, not like that shit. But yeah, like, yeah, this album is good. I do say, I mean, in the year we have a lot of great rap albums, like, we have a lot of great rap albums that we got, but yeah, this is definitely another good one. I really recommend it. It's very good. And that is my time.
All right. Now, time for me to try to do this as efficiently as I can. Because I got about, like, 16 or so here albums that I heard. 11 of them being ones that I would consider top picks for the month. Thankfully, these first two I can at least get through pretty quickly, because they've already been addressed conveniently enough by yourself, Mr. Mark. So, let's start off here. First top pick. Yeah, IDK, Is He Real? Now, I recall saying when I Was Very Bad came out that was a good album, but I felt like the next album he came out with was going to be something really interesting and special. And lo and behold, it is. Especially that whole, like, framing thematic motif of, like, his relationship to religion growing up in life and everything. You know, intermixing that with all of his struggles and whatnot. And this album just, it's everything I liked about I Was Very Bad, but just more and extra. Because this is a guy who can really, like, flex on any kind of rap song. Like, he can do, like, you know, the hard-hitting, boastful flexes. He's got, you know, those bomb-ass songs with, like, deep social commentary and stuff. Of course, there's the more moody, somber jams. Shit, even when he wants to, like, fleck on fucking, like, you know, fucking sex jokes and shit, like on the song Porno, he's got more effort in every single punchline than any other rapper wishes. Like, that whole fucking, like, friggin' set of lines about, like, Cocoa Puffs and milk and shit. Like, come on. Like, don't you wish any other rapper could come up with sex jokes that creative? I wish they would. And yeah, of course, there's the weirder parts in there, like, I Do Me, You Do You, which is, like, that conversation about, like, you know, God, the nature of God, how he exists within everyone, and then has that weird gag at the end about fucking robot bitches. That's a thing. Of course, fucking straight up bangers like 24, fucking, God, what was the other one? I think Digital, yeah, I've gotten used to that more and more. Like, that might be my favorite track off the album overall. That shit fucking slaps as hell. And, yeah, this is everything I wanted out of a new, IDK album and more. It's just really impossibly tight. And if you're still sleeping on this guy, then what the hell are you doing? Anyway, moving on to the next album here, which, of course, yeah, Mr. fucking Peggy over here. All My Heroes Are Cornballs. An album that he says disappoints, but only disappoints because it is awesome. So I am disappointed that I am not disappointed. Shame on you, sir. Yeah, this is another nice vertical slice of just that really weird offbeat sound that he's known for. Of course, the production, as always, veers wildly between, like, this kind of, like, bursts of, like, aggro, you know, kind of aggro-aggressiveness and, like, those weird, more chill, serene qualities in parts. You know, the lyrics, as always, there's a lot of those weird, like, wordplay and references and stuff. Like, in the song Keenan versus Kel, where the first half itself is really chill and the second half gets really angry. You know, lots of digs at, like, Grammy winners, Kanye West's Yandi album, fucking name-dropping Jack and Daxter. Of course, it's not hard to, like, get a visceral thrill out of, you know, beta male strategies, especially considering, like, you know, as we've mentioned, the dick lasagna stands out there, who could probably stand to hear a song like this.
Like, oh, yeah, I love somebody would have told me what about this. Say something on Twitter. Come on, bitch.
Of course, fucking grimy waifu is beautifully weird. Like, I'm just trying to imagine him snuggling with his military weapon like it's a freaking Dakimakura of the snake chick from Monster Musume. Of course, when he needs to get serious, he absolutely does. Like, I mean, there is the song PTSD where he touches on, you know, mental health struggles, some that he probably picked up from, like, his service in the military, because that happens a lot. Of course, even then, there's still... That's the thing I like about him, just how hard he swerves between, you know, rapping about stuff like biting crackers, wondering why you're so anorexic, and having songs like Rap Grow Old and Die, No Child Left Behind, where he's like, I click a bitch, I'm Adam Sandler bringing major pain. Wow, someone else other than me remembers that click was a thing. But yeah, this is another, you know, killer offering from JPEG. Awesomely weird production, hard-ass flows, lyrics that are every bit as insightful as they are just plain weird. Yeah, Peggy. He will not disappoint you, regardless of what he says. Anyway, time to move on to the rest. So, this new Chelsea Wolfe album, I know she has been around for a while. I heard a lot about her when her last album, His Spun, came out, because apparently it was the closest she got into writing a straight-up metal record, like, kind of like this really... She's normally gothic singer-songwriter, but this one... fuse that with, like, some kind of doom metal elements, and I actually did go through her whole discography, and I gotta say, I like what I'm hearing. Surprisingly more than I was expecting, anyway. So now we have this album here, Birth of Violence, which to a certain extent kind of pulls back on that a bit. Like, it definitely refocuses more on just pure, like, gothic folk atmosphere. A lot of the album carries that sound, like, it's mainly driven by, you know, like, sort of acoustic guitars. There's, you know, some drums in there, there's, you know, occasional organing situations and various other things. And of course, Chelsea's vocals herself, who, for this kind of aesthetic, she is a really strong vocal performer. I mean, you get a lot of that pretty much from the jump with the song The Mother Road that starts things off. You know, it starts really low-key and somber, but as it builds and builds and builds, it really swells into this, like, really dramatic back half climax that's really kind of hauntingly beautiful in a way. Of course, that atmosphere continues to the rest of the album with songs like American Darkness and Be All Things that definitely allow her to shine as a singer. Of course, the energy picks up a bit on songs like Erday, which ramps up in intensity near the end. There's songs like Preface to a Dream Play and Little Grave that kind of have these synthetic ambient musical touches in there. There's kind of not much I can say in addition to that, though. Admittedly, the album does sound pretty consistent in sound, but that one sound it's hitting is really strong. I thought it was just going to be, like, good, but, like, I might have to consider this for a top spot. Again, I'm enjoying this more than I was expecting to. Kind of weird. Anyway, moving on from that to some actual metal shit. And here's what I wasn't even expecting to happen. This new album from Migwa, Age of Excuse. Honestly, I didn't even know it was happening, which is weird. Because I actually quite enjoyed their last album they came out with, I think it was 4 years ago, Exercises in Futility. Proving themselves to be one of, like, the five or six black metal bands that are unconditionally worth a shit. And you pretty much know that, like, listening to this. Because, like, okay, the album is, like, 40 minutes or so, but it's split up into, like, seven songs that are, like, each called, like, Age of Excuse 1 through 7. And the sound is pretty consistent from track to track. Like, it's got a lot of that characteristic black metal grit with those kind of expected chord progressions and, you know, tremolos over top, the gruff bellowing vocal delivery. But what makes it work, much like their previous efforts, is that they figured out how to, like, you know, have the black metal grit, but with production that's technically still worth the shit. Like, the rhythm guitars are very meaty and cutting in what they play, providing a nice body for a lot of the higher-end tremolos and melodies to work off of. The drums absolutely receive the most benefit from the production. Like, not only is the playing incredibly tight in terms of, like, controlling between rapid blast beats, these fast double kick runs, and all kinds of fills and weird sticking patterns and 6-8 rhythms, but there's actually a huge amount of punchiness and clarity to it. Like, if you're listening to the, like, Age of Excuse 3, for example, it's a relentless onslaught of all of those kinds of musical qualities. It never lets up steam throughout, and you can definitely make out, like, the nuances of the sticking patterns and cymbal hits and everything. Like, a lot of it is just, like, really good. That's kind of the key here, and why I'm not describing the album in, like, further detail, because, again, the sound is fairly consistent from track to track. I mean, it is black metal after all, but again, they figured out if you have production that isn't complete and total garbage, then you might actually have a good fucking album in this kind of style. What a fucking shock. This is how you write good black metal shit. Anyway, time to move on to the next album here. I think pretty much by a country mile, the longest one I heard this month. That being an hour and 20 minutes for Cult of Luna with A Dawn to Fear. Making us wait 6 years since, I believe, Vertical. For the first proper solo effort from these guys, not including that collaboration from their years back. So, yeah, time for them to close out the decade. And this is, in terms of, like, doomy post-metal, this is one of the best of the year. Definitely one of the best, maybe of, like, the last 5 years or so. Like, it really understands how to, like, use that atmosphere to build, like, these foreboding kind of melodramatic musical tendencies in and out. Like, as soon as you hit play on the opener, The Silent Man, it lays that sound on thick with these massive mid-tempo grooving progressions. The bass and guitars are massive in sound and scope. The drums burst outward with each hit of the snares and cymbals, all whirling together to create this kind of general vast atmosphere. The song swells, builds in mood, has room for that somber, melancholic bridge for a bit of reprieve before picking back up in the melodrama. And of course, that vibe continues into the next track, Lay Your Head to Rest, with this slower groove of the guitars in rhythm with these meaty bass slides building a thick, foreboding atmosphere. Hell, much of the title track decides to go more moody with that very hazy feel as the vocals, instead of bellowing, are a lot more moany most of the time. The drums are low in the mix, and the guitars kind of have this very, almost kind of a dingy doom meets 90s grunge kind of thing going on. Of course, Nightwalkers bring some really huge menace in spades, including this kind of really great bridge with this offbeat rolling hi-hat rhythm. And of course, the inarguable centerpiece of the record being the album's longest track, the 15-minute long Lights on the Hill, which combines everything the album is going for into this one massive, epic, hauntingly beautiful, doomy epic. The doom-like quiet opening minutes, the heavy grooving instrumentation, the intensely melancholic vibes throughout a lot of it. Again, the track, much like the album as a whole, really knows how to use all of these elements to build a mood as it, like, flows and alters appropriately, really using the lengthier compositions to their advantage. Like, this is, yeah, pretty much a damn great doom post-metal record, and a fitting way for them to close out this whole decade. Now, here's one I missed out. Well, not missed out, but I decided to check out on a whim, because I heard a lot of some good things about it poking in and out of the spheres, and it kind of got my attention just on the band name alone. But I didn't realize they had a connection to a band that I had actually brought up all the way in the first album roundup of the year. That being the new album from CU Space Cowboy with their album The Correlation Between Entrance and Exit Wounds. And yes, just taking that band name, it's beautiful, isn't it? So, yeah, remember earlier, if you remember, one of the first great albums I talked about this year was the full-length debut from Wrist Meat Razor. Well, apparently, the drummer of that band used to play in this band, which I kind of, that kind of set off in my head a bit, because when I was listening to this album, it kind of felt very similar. Like, a lot of the songs are very, like, about 2 minutes or so, kind of like, you know, brief, punchy bursts of, like, this kind of screamo metalcore sort of thing, although I hesitate to use that since they themselves are like kind of hesitant about the label. Although, to be fair, I could come up with other comparison points. Like, overall, their style is probably more akin, much like Wrist Meat Razor, to a late 90s, early 2000s kind of metalcore, hardcore acts like Poison the Well, Coalesce, early Evergreen Terrorists, think that general era. A lot of the tracks have this frenetic energy punctuated by lots of aggressive pounding drum passages, harsh screeching guitar progressions like the album opener Armed with the Teeth. Of course, there's the frenetic mathiness of tracks like Put on a Show, Don't Let Them See You Fall, and Disdained Couple with a Wide Smile. The vocals themselves swap wildly between these vicious, full-throated screeches and more somber, moody spoken word bits. A Dissertation of an Idle Voice brings that energy together with a lot more melodic somber tendencies expected of the more kind of emo-ish side of all this, including writing that expected kind of 6-8 groove with a lot of these moody-ass melodies over top. Then there's Prolonged of the Inevitable Forever, which has this particularly menacing, slow, pummeling, groovy chug to it, along with more of the aggressive, like, kind of fast beat chugs as well. And a lot of the moodier vibes come into play, emphasizing tracks like Late December or No Words, No Compensating Lies. So, yeah, this is some extremely energetic kind of metalcore, hardcore shit with a lot of those pounding, screechy guitar passages and just a general, like, aggro and, of course, emo vibe. It's, if you're sleeping on this, you probably shouldn't be. It is probably going to be a sleeper hit, I think. Like, underappreciated if you're not already listening. Now, let's move on to the next album here. Now, children, let me tell you about a magical time called the late 80s, early 90s. Before there were bands like Lamb of God or even Machine Head, there was a group called X-Hoarder, the early pioneers of that kind of very thrashy, groove-laden sort of metal sound. They only ever released 2 albums, their last one being in 1992, and then I kind of lose track of the story from there, but all we do know for sure is that they've been back recently and probably have one of the more hyped comeback albums in sort of the metal scene, that being their first new album in 27 years, Mourn the Southern Skies. And, you know, for a group that's been away for a while, for like nearly 30 years, I'm amazed at how energized and intense this is for like a metal record. Like, the album opener, My Time, brings that heft in spades. The guitars are crunchy as hell with their tremolo chugs and general thrashing riffs. The drums have an insane amount of power in their playing. And the vocals carry that wild fucking feeling with their screams. And the production manages to amp up and modernize the X-Hoarder sound without really diluting it. It just makes it more furious and aggressive. Of course, when you have those thrashier songs like that, you have more groovier tracks like Asunder, Hollowed Sound, which swings around with a lot of this massive sonic force, including this heavy, heavy halftime bridge. And that's pretty much the album in a nutshell. Like, if I were to go, like, track by track, I would be repeating myself, admittedly, but it doesn't really, like, need that much of an explanation. Like, it is pure. If you know the Lamb of God and the Machine Head sound, in fact, I would very well say that this album might very well be the best Lamb of God album we've gotten all decade. Because, I mean, the last Lamb of God album we got kind of wasn't maybe that great, just saying.
Okay, that's a hot bold take. Claim. I'll get back to you on that and see whether or not your claim is valid.
seriously, this is, in terms of that thrashy, groove-laden metal style, this is just fucking killer. It is a beast of a record. And, you know, if you've never heard them before, now's a good time to start. Anyway, time to move on from that to one of the internet precious darlings of slamming technical-ass death metal. Although I think some people might scream at me for using the term slam, but I don't care. This new album from Infant Annihilator with The Battle of Yeldabaoth. Sadly, not a concept album inspired by Persona 5. Damn it. But yeah, this is, of course, we finna get obnoxious with some dumb, heavy as shit death metal, and it fucking grinds on your senses at every conceivable turn. This is an album that fucking hits, it floors it from the start and never lets up. The album opener, Child Chewer, tells you everything you need to know. Furious rapid double kick patterns with plenty of blast beats and furious pummeling, you know, progressions. Fucking heavy ass vocals that growl, screech, bree, all of that wonderful nonsense in its wonderful obnoxiousness. Guitars that are heavy as shit with their crunchy fast riffs intermixed with plenty of like wild sweeps and like pinch harmonics and shit. And trust me, I said it before, it doesn't let up. I fucking mean it. Like, it's going from track to track with that level of energy, like on Three Bastards right down with its fucking unrealistically fast and, you know, to be fair, if I recall correctly, probably programmed anyway, gravity blasts and kick runs. The longest track on the album, The Kingdom Sitteth Lonely Beneath Thy Hallowed Heavens, definitely has a lot of fucking breakdown heavy parts in there to kind of like move in between the manic, technical, brutal energy. And even has some guest vocals from Trevor Strnad of the Black Dahlia Murder, which, by the way, dude, we're like 2 months away from the year ending when you have no news on a new album. Come on, man, help me out here. Meanwhile, Feasts for Gore Glutton includes those rapid, fast screaming passages common in a lot of deathcore and shit. And I can't add any more to it. It is just relentlessly fucking monstrous. Either you're on board with it or you're not, and I completely am, to be perfectly honest. Anyway, time to move on to a quick break from the heaviness, just to mention the album that's already been mentioned by all of us. Yes, Urgell Simpson, Sound and Fury. Still have not seen the Netflix adaptation of this thing, but I was of course stoked for the album given that I really liked The Sailor's Guide to Earth, and this is of course quite the switch up. First and foremost, this is a rock and roll record. Granted, one heavily steeped in modern production tendencies with a heavy amount of psychedelic production effects and synths, but this is still rock as shit through and through. Like, the slow, steady groove of the album opener, Ronin, allows for these kind of extended, almost kind of Pink Floydish guitar solos to, like, marinate across the whole of the piece. And then, of course, getting into Remember to Breathe, which has this steady vibe with bass grooves and church organs, played in a manner that feels almost kind of like a post-apocalypse Aerosmith in a way. And then, of course, we get the lead single, Sing Along, which is this just really rowdy banger with huge amounts of fuzzy guitars and psychedelic synth accentuations. And then the fucking just funky as shit, just generalness of like a good look with those killer bass lines, that nice clattery vibe to the percussion, and the synths and keyboard work, which almost kind of feel like they're throwing back to kind of like, you know, peak period Stevie Wonder in a way. That's just me, though. It's a fucking party of a song. Of course, the album has room for some more downbeat tracks amid it, like Make Art Not Friends and the much more gospel-inspired All Said and Done. Its heavier tendencies are on tracks like Best Clockmaker to Mars with that really thick, like, hammer-on, pull-on riff combined with the squealing synths, probably best emphasizing this whole dystopian rock motif, while Last Man Standing is, of course, yet another excellent rock banger. And once again, I gotta say, suck it, Greta Van Fleet. Sturgill Simpson is also better at doing old school rock music than you are. Middle finger. Seriously, like, this is how you do it. This is how you, you know, bring classic styles to the now while adding your own creative flourishes. Thank you, Sturgill. You are giving me yet another serious top contender I have to think about. And now we close out on a pair of mathcore albums, this first one here being the first one from the band in 10 years. Yes, the number 12 Looks Like You with Wild Gods. Now, granted, I only got into this band, like, in the past couple of years or so, but still, even I knew, like, this was kind of like an event of sorts, because they were releasing some of the most frenetic, insane albums of, like, the 2000s and shit. Like, they make no bones about like their sound and their intentions when the album opens with the weird kind of off-kilter mathcore jazz fusion of Gallery of Thrills, you know, kind of that clean guitars playing those weird kind of rhythms before the chugging rhythms take over for much of the song, although the jazz break does come back in though. And then conversely, by that standard, Last Laughter is almost more like kind of practically death metal-ish with its vicious blast beats, its menacing halftime grooves, and really weird off-kilter cymbal sticking patterns, playing off against these really fast, hard shredding guitars with a lot of those mathier passages here and there. We've already mentioned multiple times how Ruin the Smile is a beautifully menacing song about killing pedophiles, always a plus in my book. And conversely, tracks like Ease My Siamese are some of the more beautifully emotive, with their melodic construction really taking center stage while never letting off the gas with some of its more weird, wild drum fills and everything. Raised in a Race, the other single we talked about, is another great like hybridization of like the cleaner sort of passages with these disorienting rhythms and strange melodies for a really nuts tune, especially with like that backing part where you get like the ominous sort of gothic carnival like organ synth thing going on. Of course, the vocals all across, there's the, you know, nice clean ones, the harsh scream ones, and then you get the weirder performances like on Tombow's Wound, which kind of sounds like a Look What I Did song in terms of its vocal performance, which is kind of a harder swerve for when the song leans into like its more cleaner passages. Overall, interestingly enough, there might be more melody on here than past albums. Like, it definitely feels like it's letting up a bit on the intensity and letting that part shine through. But even with that, the album still blends together effortlessly, the cleans with the metal and the weird avant-garde energy, all into an album that definitely feels like it was worth the 10 years it took to finally get here. Very good shit. And now for the last album we have here, this one being one that I was, you know, I was surprised that I would pick this as, I guess, the last one to talk about. I guess kind of the unofficial top spot here, because there was a lot I could have chosen here. But yeah, let's talk about the new Car Bomb album, Mordial. Probably one of the better mathcore bands that are out there, especially now that Dillinger's all done and gone. They have this intensely dynamic sound that's generally characterized by like those frenetic chugging rhythms, those heavily digitized accentuations, and of course a heavy emphasis on tempos that pick up and slow down at like random. This sound is arguably at its most dynamic and interesting here on Mordial, opening up with Fade Out, which showcases many of those familiar elements, you know, that aforementioned fast slow tempos. It's definitely something that emphasizes how chaotic the guitar and drum rhythms can be, with the song closing out on this particularly mournful melodic passage. And then, of course, Vague Skies actually kind of has like a sort of old school Deftones, like around the first sort of vibe to it, before bringing those furious chugs that it swaps back and forth between, emphasized by that sort of low-tuned descending riffs. Seriously, the song emphasizes the dissonance between like the rhythms and tempos really well with that excellent Deftone-sounding chorus. And strangely enough, while the freneticness, that chaos of the whole album is really on point as always, it's the melodies that become a surprisingly strong focal point here, which work really well to contrast the harsher moments like the heavy digitized guitar chugs of Scattered Sprites, adding a welcome somber reprieve to its more jerky spastic riffs and that kind of poking pinch harmonic thing going on. Dissect Yourself is a bit more of a pure slice of heavy with the many blast beats, ear-stabbing digital squeals, and that incredibly bassy sort of low end in the mix. XOXOY has this particularly huge energy with its rapid chugs and drum rhythms, swapping in a lot of weird effects driven passages to segue between that and the more atonal vocal melodies of everything. Seriously, how this band still maintains so much energy across like this many albums, like I think this is their fourth, and like across so many songs, is beyond me, with it all still feeling fresh and everything. But yeah, this is a damn good Car Bomb album. I may have to put it on the end of the year list, and by the way, if you ever get a chance to see them live, you should. They kick ass. Okay, that's all my top picks. Now, time to get to the quick round here, starting out the top with Tegan and Sarah, Hey, I'm Just Like You, an album apparently collected from songs that they had written, like, in their high school years, and I think that's kind of a good summation of the sound when you think about it, because this is almost like a past and present sort of motif here, one that sort of mixes their more twee alternative indie rock side with their more modern synth pop tendencies, finding a happy balance between the two, and there's some catchy songs in here. I think it works overall. Here's one that I didn't mention in the actual listings, but I felt I have to because, you know, synthwave boy. The new VHS Glitch album, System Hacked. Another solid set of really creepy, ominous synth bangers from VHS Glitch, coated with thick, low-end, bassy synths, creepy church organs, and a generally intimidating atmosphere. With, of course, a decent amount of straight-up bangers here and there. Especially Final Internal Warfare, which fucking slaps. This is... I don't have much to say other than it's a perfect album to carry with you into Halloween, assuming it doesn't drop something at any point this month, which, you know, you very well could, you know, drop something for October. So, hey, double dose of spooks. Next up, as I mentioned, first time listening to Lindsey Stirling with Artemis, only ever been vaguely aware, but I actually found myself digging this overall. It balances a lot of really excellent synthy electronic production with her beautiful compositions, and of course her generally strong violin playing from track to track. And I actually weirdly ended up liking that Amy Lee collaboration in spite of my general indifference towards her and Evanescence as a whole. This is a pretty good album to vibe out to, in my opinion. Just let the magic of it all envelop you. Here's an interesting offbeat one. I was actually emailed by an artist named Travis Benson, who was interested in me checking out their self-titled album, just full disclosure, and I found some interesting stuff in there to listen to. The best way I could characterize it would be to think of sort of indie prog, like Neutral Milk Hotel by way of the more melodic side of Dream Theater. It's a very kind of maximalist sound that throws a lot of ideas at you and songwriting flourishes here and there. And while I'm interested to hear where he goes from here, I will admit I wish Travis himself flexed his vocal chops a bit more. Like, even in some of the crazier moments on the album, it's still he still kind of sits in like a general comfortable, like that indie register. Like I said, like Neutral Milk Hotel pretty much. But I'm intrigued. I might have to revisit this at some point. Anyway, moving on from that, there's the new Kyodot record Blasphemy, which, similar to their last album, is coated in atmosphere and a lot of really synth-like accentuations. It feels less new wave than their previous album, although there's still some of those, like, you know, synthier tendencies in there. This one almost kind of feels like akin to sort of Leprous in a way. It's solid enough, although I still think I might need more time for it to marinate. And last but not least of the quick picks, Opeth in Caldivinium. Pretty much because, again, I think I still need a bit of time to marinate on this, even though I've given it a couple of listens already. I'm still teetering on this. Like, I will say for certain that I do think this is the most effort yet that I think Opeth has tried to find that happy balancing act between those who want metal Opeth and people who like prog rock Opeth. But, again, it's still... I still need to think about this one. I might need another month or so.
Yeah, that's how it be, huh?
And then, of course, there is the one low light, and that is the new, yeah, Post Malone.
I knew it was
bleeding. Sorry, Jared.
You know, I don't even really have much to say about it, because, I mean, if you've heard any of his previous albums, I mean, I'm pretty sure we all heard Beer Bongs and Bentleys. It's pretty much the same thing and kind of the same problems. Like, look, I'm sure Post is a cool dude and everything. He's just not an interesting singer or songwriter. It's just an album that kind of sleepwalks from track to track. And I will be nice, and I will say that the Ozzy Osbourne Travis Scott collaborative track is a lot better than it has any right to be. But even then, overall, I'm just like, I do not really care about this guy. Like, friggin' why? What did I didn't have to listen to this. I could have avoided this like Alex avoided that Blink-182 album. Nothing makes us do this. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, I mean, overall, a pretty solid month. Like, you know, even when that's all I have to say about the weakest album I heard this month, I think I'm doing pretty good for myself. But that about does it for this month. And of course, if you're interested in any of these albums, there will be a Spotify playlist in the description of this post. So jump down there and be sure to do, you know, the thing. Of course, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at SuperReslow. All that usual good shit. We will, of course, be back next time for the usual nonsense. And until next time. Now, I should probably listen to the Swedish version. Maybe that makes more sense.